Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Happy to be joined by somebody who I've never actually met. I've handed a phone to and I've introduced multiple times, but Francesca Di Lorenzo, D'Lo, joining us here, 24 years of age, out of Columbus, training out of Tampa, and unfortunately having to spend time in a hotel room right now with Noah Rubin, and I'm so very sorry for that. I've done it before myself. It's a miserable experience, but thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's tough right now sitting next to Noah here, but we'll get through it, I think.
Do you feel like a giant? Do you feel like you're
I do. You know, yeah. I have that presence. I entered the room and I just automatically just towering over.
Yeah, it's
over.
Like 6 inches, taller. You
the
just
difference,
feel it.
You know.
Yeah,
just
no,
used
I feel
to
you.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
Are you more bald than the last time we spoke?
That's probably. That is how it works. And fatter. So I'll just take care of that one for you, too. I'm definitely fatter.
So we start the week off, and obviously she's giving me a face as soon as she sees me, immediately right off the bat, and that's just usually how it works. Yeah. But I actually didn't even know you were a native here until you kind of looked me in the eyes and said, like, why the fuck are you not asking me for recommendations? I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I'll give you all the food recs, anything you need to know about Columbus. I'm from New Albany, which is actually 25 minutes away from campus. So that's where I grew up. I was born in Pittsburgh, but moved to Columbus when I was 6 years old. So know a decent amount about the city.
Was Ohio State always in the cars? Was that it, like, from day one? Did
you
your parents always want it? Did you always want it?
No, they were wanting me to go wherever I was going to be happiest. Yeah, sure. But I think it did help that I did, like, clinics when I was younger. I trained a little bit at Ohio State. Ty Tucker, the men's coach there, I worked a lot with when I was in juniors. So that he had a big impact on my game. But I was actually ultimately deciding between UCLA and Ohio State, so one opposite to the other, and chose Ohio State, and that was probably the best decision I had ever made. So
it's interesting I having been around the Big Ten myself at Illinois, like, Ohio State's been good on the women's side for a while, but hasn't ever been great. How did you factor that aspect in when UCLA does have maybe a little bit more of a pedigree, especially as you were so highly ranked as a recruit at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I knew the girls that were coming in on the team. I think they were, when I went in, they were juniors. So there were four girls that were, I think, all juniors when I first came in as a freshman, and then two other girls that were sophomores. And so they really had a team that was getting better and that was on the rise. So that's something I took into consideration. Because you can look at the top schools, and that's great that they're number one in the country, but how many of them have girls that were number one in juniors, number two, number three, number four? They were already good. So, yes, that's great that they have those girls. I mean, and nothing against them. That's unbelievable. They have great schools. You look at Florida, you looked at UNC, and they're awesome. But, like, the girls were already good going in. So not to say that the coaches' jobs are a little bit easier, but they're not necessarily developing the players. So what I was looking at is, like, what school has gone up? What coaches have really taken a player that maybe wasn't as good and that now they're on the rise and they're getting better? And that was something that Ohio State had been doing. You know, you looked at their ranking. I think they were at one point, they maybe were unranked. Then they were 60. Then they were 30. I think the year that I went in, the year before, actually, they finished maybe 20. So I knew they were going up, and I knew the girls were getting better. And that was something I wanted to be a part of, was building a team, hopefully, and contributing to their success.
That's an interesting point, because and I want to have like a deep discussion about college tennis, because what you just said is so overlooked. The idea of actual development, because I think a lot of college coaches, D'Lo, really focus so much on winning and mm-hmm. that need to win the collegiate championships and things along those lines, but they don't look at what makes you a better tennis player in, say, 5 years, 10 years. And that's really kind of overlooked by a lot of coaches, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of players kind of develop these bad habits, because, I mean, I developed some bad habits myself, but that was more on me because I wanted to win so badly for my team. I was willing to do anything. If I needed to stand 50 feet behind the baseline and just pop balls up, I was going to do that. But if you're looking long term, we're on similar pages here with that. If you're looking long term, you know, is that the best thing for your game going forward in the pros? Like, that's not going to work. I mean, I think if you have a coach that's really looking after you and knows your goals, I mean, some girls, let's look at it, it's 95, if not more, percent of the girls in college are going to be done once their senior year is over. So not a lot of them are wanting to continue on and playing pro tennis, which is okay. But I think that's important for your coaches to know, like, where your goals are and where do you stand. And that's something that, you know, I wanted to, of course, go beyond the college level, and I made aware to them. So it was nice because I think they had my best interest at heart. But just me being stubborn and stubborn-minded and wanting to win at all costs kind of hurt me.
Is it kind of the same on the men's than the women's side? You know, we knew that, like, the head coaches were, like, the managers, like, the administrators, everything. But it was, like, the assistants is, like, what you look at for the real coaching aspect of it. It was kind of similar for the women's side.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think they were, like, pretty even. They distributed it pretty well. I mean, I worked a lot with Ty when I went there. That was one of the things that we spoke about. I was like, you know, I loved the women's coaches. I loved Melissa. I loved Adam there. But Ty was my coach in juniors, and he was going to be a big part of my college experience.
Well, and explain that part a little bit, because Ty is, like, oversees both the men's and the women's, right?
Yeah, so I think that helped definitely.
I mean, how does that even – yeah.
So, like, he would be able to take me out of practices. I mean, of course, getting the permission of the women's coaches, and I'd be able to work with him and practice with the girls in the morning and the guys in the afternoon. So it was really cool. I was very fortunate, and I had a great team behind me that wasn't – like, there wasn't really jealousy or anything like that, you know? Like, I got to do some extra. I mean, so me hitting with him, and that was an extra part, as long as I participated in the women's practices. And
was college always the choice?
Oh, yeah. College was most definitely the choice.
There was never a thought pro before?
No, was I wasn't ready. And my parents valued me getting an education. And I mean, myself as well. But I wasn't nearly even close to thinking about going pro before college. I had just started playing ITF juniors, like, my senior year of high school. And I actually did well. I think I got finished, like, 11. For playing a little over a year.
Yeah, 11 sucks. I mean, for like five tournaments.
No. But I mean, it was cool because I got to experience a little bit what it would be like traveling. I traveled a lot by myself, so traveling the world. So that was an eye-opener for sure. But, yeah, I definitely needed that stepping stone for sure.
But you were 11 in the world. You could say what you want, but, like, you were 11 in the world. People definitely said, like, hey, let's play pro tennis now, right? There had to be people that came up to you.
No, you know, it's honestly, like, I had, like, I had a lot of college offers, but, like, no one ever said, like, I mean, I don't have an agent, like, still even now, like, I've never been spoken to, never been approached or anything like that. And I'm okay with it, because I just feel like when the time's right and when I prove myself, then, you know, things will come up and opportunities will arise. But I never had anybody come up to me or anything. I mean, I went to like normal school, so I think that kept me a little bit grounded. My parents were not involved in the tennis at all, so it's not like they were reaching out or anything like that. So I just did my own thing, and but no, I never really had like opportunities, so to say.
Just an awful 11 in the world.
It's just like,
just the worst.
We'll deal with it. College, here I come.
I don't know if you know this. Noah won Wimbledon once.
Yeah, I do know that. Would you play? Did you play a puck on the finals of that or something?
No. We're not talking about this. He does. How do you turn me winning Wimbledon into a bad thing? How is that possible?
I remember. Did you come through qualies in that or something?
I did. Yeah. Thank you so much, D-Lo. How have you turned my winning a junior Grand Slam into it? Like, I actually don't talk about it now because of you.
Wait, was it Kozlov in the finals? Kozlov. Okay. Yeah. Wow. You weren't planning
really
on
impressive.
Going, were you, to school? And then you decided last minute?
I didn't really plan on going pro at that time. I really didn't. I mean, I was 6, not 11 in the world. So
Wow.
Yeah, it's this dude here, 6.
Yeah, no, I wanted school too. I mean, my decision was strange. Wake at the time was like 33 in the country.
Yeah.
So that was weird. But I had people speaking about it. It's crazy. You didn't have one person say like, hey, maybe win a 60K. And
yeah, no, never. Like never that. Was on the not on the mind. No. Yeah. Nope. No. Always just a little bit out of it, just
always
like you
just
said.
A little out.
So I remember seeing you in college, and there are on the women's side there have been two athletes who I said to myself, I don't want to run into this human being in a dark alley because they will beat my ass. One of them was Georgia Rose, who played at Northwestern. Number two was you.
Okay.
When you were in the lines there, you looked like you just wanted to absolutely murder someone. I remember that vividly. And I'm wondering how you developed that mindset of just ferocity when you actually get out on court.
Yeah, that's funny you say
and,
that.
And also, have you actually murdered anyone?
That one, no, I haven't. But, you know, we don't know for the future. So right now, I just say no.
Okay.
But I think, honestly, my older sister played tennis as well. And we grew up competing against each other. And we're so competitive. It got to the point, actually, like, we would go to practices, but in different cars. Like, we couldn't even, like, speak.
Wow.
Yeah, if that tells you anything.
Family.
A lot of love there, you know. But, I mean, that really, like, kind of fired us up and got that competitiveness going and, like, every single point, do or die in practice. I mean, we had to be on different courts. It was my mom just really had it her hands full with us. But I think that's where that competitiveness sparked and always just wanting to win. So I think when I play those matches, it kind of like comes out whoever I'm playing. I just have that like desire to win kind of in college, really at all costs. And I think it was elevated even more because I had my teammates there next to me. So I was really going to do whatever it took.
And on top of that, so again, this is an outsider's perspective, right? I've seen Ty Tucker for a long time.
Yeah.
And frankly, being at Illinois, as you know, the Illinois-Ohio State, the men's rivalry specifically, was intense for many years. And frankly, a lot of hatred because Ty Tucker comes in. He doesn't look like the tennis coach, right? He's wearing his sweatpants. He looks like he's a – right. He's like – and he's
like
got his paper
– papers in his pants.
Right,
yeah,
paper
yeah,
tucked
yeah.
in the pants. Right. So he
hat
just
–
it looks like he's –
2 inches yes. too high. Yeah, yeah.
He should be on a football field somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So there was always that like resentment of it. But one thing I always truly respected was he always had his players running, ready to run through a brick wall for him. Like
yeah.
there was always just that, again, intensity. And I imagine that rubbed off as well for you.
Yeah. I mean, just going to the practices, I think also working with him a little bit in high school as well. I mean, I knew his teaching style and how intense he was with every single drill, every ball. One person makes a mistake, everyone's on the line. So you really learn to give everything you got for every drill. And those guys show it. I mean, you see them competing out there, their butts off. It starts with the practices. I mean, every single practice, I saw him practicing today there. It's just so intense. They give everything they got. And he I think that's something he does incredibly well. He gets the most out of you. whether you like it or not. And, you know, it's funny. I always say, like, the Americans, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into when you go to Ohio State. But, like, I kind of sometimes feel bad for the foreigners because you're not necessarily, like, you haven't been around it. Maybe you haven't heard Ty's name. I mean, he's a legend in college tennis. So you don't really know. And then you get there and, you know, you're running side to side 30 shots in a row, which is you would love this. This would be your dream. Running 30, 40 balls. I mean, give me more. I think that's what you'd be saying. But, I mean, it's the intensity is just unmatched. And I think putting in all that work kind of shows off on match day.
How hard has that been, though, to actually translate to the pro level? Because it's one thing if you're doing two matches in a mm-hmm. weekend.
Yeah.
It's another thing when you've got five matches in a week, though.
Yeah. You mean like playing more matches at the pro level?
In terms of just the intensity level of just being so present, match in, match out, when you have to do it five matches in a week, 30 weeks a year versus twice a weekend.
Well, I think, it's different. I mean, the level's different. There's so many different aspects now. I mean, you're by yourself. So the intensity, I still think, is the same. But you're now just so much more on your own. So it's like, if you don't really want to show up, like, no one's – you're not going to get punished for that. In college, you would, you know. You would sit out. You wouldn't play a match, so to say, if you didn't show up. Like, now it's your job. So, like, that's what you do for a living. So if I didn't give my best effort, that's on me. I mean, that's only hurting myself. Like, I pay my coaches. Like, my coaches aren't employed by a university now. So everything is – it's a little bit different. But so it's – yeah, I mean, I bring the you got to bring the intensity every day as a player and pretty much every aspect. It's not really on the court anymore. It's mentally off the court, taking time to do the stretching, like the little things, nutrition, making sure like every little thing is right. And in college, it's all done for you. You don't really think about that stuff. So it's definitely a wake-up call, I think, when you leave school, or at least it was for me. You know, my flight's not booked immediately. Like, I'm doing that, you know? Like, I'm like, oh, I'm showing up and I don't have a hotel room. So, you know, learning a lot of things. But it takes some time. But I think I've gotten pretty used to it.
I mean, I didn't even go to Ohio State. I'm scared of Ty Tucker. Like, I would just have yes. that in my head and just, like, it would intimidate the shit out of me.
You don't run for one drop shot, you're done. Everybody on the line.
I mean, we got here the first day because we practiced a new facility, and it was a mixed practice, and he was choked up on the racket feeding volley overhead over and over and over and just screaming on every time he does it. I'm just like... oh my, I'm shaking right now for these guys. Like, I'm not scared.
I remember those drills.
The D-low volley coming up high.
Yeah, if you miss it, you know, you're done. Next. You just get nexted. That's what we say. We're nexted to the back of the line. You miss one ball, you're done.
But professional tennis for you, how has it been? Like, is it enjoyable? What are the things you're taking out of it in the first few years? And is it anything like you imagined?
Definitely the transition was really difficult because I think you go from playing college tennis where it was probably the same for you. I lost maybe, I think, my sophomore year, like, two matches throughout the year, and then you're going to losing every single week. And that's something for me is, you know, I'd rather chop my arm off than lose, you know. And the saying that I hate to lose more than I love to win, it's so true. So I found that really, really difficult. And also to have that short-term memory loss, you know, just be like, okay, like, that was that week. Maybe you played a crap match. Okay, next week, let's move on. So that's probably been the biggest adjustment for me, is that not to get too down on myself and too disappointed, because it's a sport that constantly tells you, at least professionally, that, like, you're not good enough. You're losing every single week, and it's tough to not get down on yourself, you know, if you're not, like, an already extremely optimistic person. And it's just like you're trying to be perfect in a sport that it's impossible to reach perfection. Like, no one's ever going to be perfect, and you're going to maybe play, I think, four perfect, so to say, or something that you would consider great matches a year, maybe. So you're never really satisfied, and it's a tough thing to, like, it's a tough concept to really understand, especially going from college where you get all this confidence winning matches. If you need confidence, I can go play, like, maybe, like, a local or, like, a lower D1 team and grab some confidence. Here now, like, playing a 25K first round is extremely difficult. There is no confidence building the confidence. So that's probably – it's really difficult for me. So I'd be lying if I said it was by any means easy. I've – think it's extremely challenging, and I strongly consider everybody that wants to play professional tennis, like, you really, really have to have a love and passion for this sport. Yeah, don't. Just don't. But, I mean, if there's even a question in your mind whether you want to play, like, I would urge you to at least stay in college longer or reconsider, because it is – and not to sound negative, but just as like a warning, it is extremely challenging. You know, you're going through these obstacles every single week, and you start to question yourself at some point. So the sport professionally is really difficult, and you kind of got to lean on the people that have been in your corner. And if you're lucky enough, I've had some people in my corner that have stood by me through the difficult moments. You know, this year has been definitely tough for me. So it's just kind of working through it and seeing that, okay, you know, I'll keep putting in work and every single day. It'll pay off at some point. But then I think it will pay off when people say it'll come. You know, that's kind of a platitude. Will it come? You know, you don't know. You know, yeah. Hard work pays off. It's a little bit cliche because it's not guaranteed. You know, that's what I learned. Tennis owes no one anything. You know, just because you put in work doesn't mean it's going to pay off. Does it give you a better chance? Yes. But, you know, there's a lot of people that work extremely hard at their jobs and everything, not just in tennis, and it doesn't guarantee success. So I think that's a little bit scary, but that's just kind of like every other job.
Do you have like a snapping button to do after that? I felt like I just had a monologue. No. I got pumped up.
I do have applause.
Yeah.
But so, and I want to kind of go into that a little bit, because I, you know, looking at your results, you hit your career high right before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if, you know, with what you just said in mind, if you feel like you've changed a lot over this last year and a half in terms of how you view things, because you seem to be on that path up, wild card into Indian Wells last mm-hmm. year, everything seemed right, then it's not. Yeah. And I'm wondering how much
that. Yes.
Let's relive all of it right now.
But I'm wondering yeah. how much that played into the last year for you mm-hmm. and how you're kind of coping with that now to kind of get back into that good mindset that you talk about.
Yeah, well, actually, before COVID hit, before Indian Wells was canceled, I was kind of struggling a little bit mentally. I wasn't necessarily like enjoying it, enjoying being out on the road. Really, I would, to be honest, like mentally in every single match. So I kind of felt a little bit of relief when the pandemic hit and we had this time off. I was like, okay, like I can reassess. You know, I have a little bit of time off. And I don't know if it hurt me, but I didn't really necessarily take that much time off. I mean, I was still hitting a couple times a week, which may not seem like much, which it really isn't in the big scheme of things. But still, like, I never took a period of time when I could have easily taken some time. And so, I mean, I think it was also difficult because you didn't know when we were going to start back up playing. So it's like right. you kind of want to be on your toes. You want to be ready. So, yeah, I never really took a little bit of a break. So when I was coming back, once the tournament started back up, and I never really worked with a sports psychologist, so I wanted to start working with someone that could maybe help me more on the mental side and understand like why a little bit of this love for the game was lost. And so I started working with a sports psychologist, and I think that helped a little bit. But I think the biggest change I made was in about like January, February this year. I stopped working with my coach who developed me since I was 10 years old. She was my first coach, and that was a huge transition because I'd been working with her for what, like 13 years at the time.
Yeah.
So that's really difficult, and I don't think you see a lot of players out on tour that have worked with someone for that long. So that was a huge change for me. And I'm now working with a couple other coaches in Tampa, Florida. And I think I just redeveloped a little bit more of that love. Like, I just needed a change at some point. And absolutely nothing against her. She helped me so much and really developed my game to the point where it was. But I think at some point it needed something fresh. And I'm not very good with change. So that was a really difficult thing for me to actually go on and do. And I think it's probably for the best for both of us. But yeah, it's tough to get out of this cycle sometimes and really understand like why you're not like enjoying what you're doing, like maybe as where before, like, you would live and die for it. And I mean, I think that's just how we grow. You know, things, some things change. And I think I realized that maybe I don't absolutely love the sport as I did when I was 10 years old. I still deep down have a love for this sport. But it's just changed. And I think that's okay. As long as I'm honest with myself and I understand that, and where I'm at, but, it's difficult. I mean, like we were talking about before, tennis comes with a lot of challenges and, you know, and that's saying it nicely. It's putting it nicely. and it's tough to get out of these like slumps or when you don't have like a lot of confidence and I'm still trying.
We spoke New Haven 2019. That was a few months before the pandemic. And we were both kind of in this limbo phase and we were like talking about everything.
Yes.
From where to live, coach, everything, you name it about tennis. And we're just like, it's a lot. It's just a lot.
It really is. And it's like, we're the only sport that like, we're managing everything. I mean, maybe you have an agent and everything like that, but it's not a team sport, you know? There's few other sports that do that, but like, we make the final call on all the decisions. And it's like, is it the right one? You don't really know. You can't really know until you jump into it. So it's difficult. And then of course, like financially, you have to take that into account. I mean, there's a lot of things to worry about, and it becomes a little bit overwhelming at times. And sometimes you need to take a step back and, you know, look at it from the outside and maybe take in the advice of a couple people that you trust. But it's sometimes nice to talk with someone that at least like understands it and can give shit back and forth with too, but you know,
that's what I'm here for.
That's what we all think about when we think about Noah is just rational thinking about those kind of things.
Negative outlook on tennis. Here I am.
He's going to be brutally honest. We know that.
Do you think you will adjust your scheduling in the future? Now that you kind of have that understanding of maybe I'll take an extra week or two, try to budget a week or two more for yourself, as opposed to playing 35 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that would be the mature thing to do. I mean, sometimes I...
It doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. but to understand, like, okay, like, maybe I'm not feeling my best this week. Maybe I need to, like, take the week off. Maybe I've been doing that a little bit more recently. I'm like, okay, like, I need to get a couple good practice weeks in, even if that means I'm going to sacrifice this tournament or I really want to, you know, I should go to Europe because it'll make sense to do 3 weeks there instead of just going for 2 weeks. Like, no, if that doesn't work and if I'm not in the right mind frame, then there's no point of even going. You know, I'm not going to waste the money. I'm not going to waste my coach's time. Like, and that's just something I'm trying to get better at is, like, communicating with my coaches when I'm feeling in a certain way or how I'm feeling about going somewhere a certain tournament and even with my sports psych. And that's just something that I'm trying to build on. But absolutely, like, in the future, I would plan accordingly.
So what are the next steps now?
Well, that's a great question. I like to know? Next week I'm going to play the 60K in Berkeley, California. And then from there, it's a little bit up in the air. I'm a little bit out of Indian Wells right now, which actually I was looking at the cut. Someone was telling me the cut for men's is like 220 for qualies.
I don't know. Indian Wells?
Have you heard of it?
Tournament?
Yeah, it's out in...
Are they really not giving you a wild card? Despite giving you one,
no,
or
have, oh, you're talking. Oh,
no, you're not getting shit
like,
ever.
You're talking to the person that people actually like.
No, I think I'm probably far down on the list. Even though, yeah, that last year would have been nice had we played that tournament. I was like, does that roll over? Like, I know we're in a different year.
You should talk to Pasha.
And, yeah, it's a new. It's in the fall, but like I was supposed to get a main draw one. I'll just take a qualies at this point. We'll just give. I won't even complain.
Yours was main draw last.
I was getting a main draw.
And you're not
one.
Getting even a qualies.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I get it. Like, you gotta, like, there's a lot of younger players, you know, you gotta constantly prove yourself.
This should be some rollover minutes.
I mean, they're gonna give like, two to Fernandez and Raducanu take away two of the wild cards right there.
But they're taking main, so I just want qualies. Yeah. I'm not gonna complain.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. Qualifying, that's totally fine.
Yeah, I just want to like step foot on the court. Like, if I can just like be there, that would be awesome. I'm super grateful, so I won't complain. No, I would love to play that. But if not, I think there's a couple other challengers, maybe out on the West Coast. I think a couple more in California after that, and then I think to finish out the year, I'll be in the U.S. Even though they did add some like 250s in Europe, but honestly, I think, like, I'm going to say, like, I want to get matches, but like we were speaking about before, a 25K or even a 60K doesn't guarantee you one match. So really, I don't know, but I'm probably going to stick with, like, that challenger U.S. schedule as of now.
It seems like you've got a decent group around you, though, down in Tampa in terms of just players that seem to, like, I know Dominic Kupfer is down
yeah,
there
a bit. Yeah, I'm good
friends
with Dom. Talked to him a lot. Yeah.
Are you working with Renee?
Yeah, I'm working with Renee Muller. Yeah, and then also Thomas Greenberg. So they work together. So when one can't travel with me, like, for example, Thomas was here this week with me. And then maybe Renee will finish out the year with me. He was actually with me for like the 6 weeks in Europe, and I think he was just like, enough of that. I never want to travel with her again. So he hasn't been with me back on the road since.
And that was, has he forced you to go fishing yet?
Not yet, but you know what's nice? I get the perks of it because he gives me the fish he fillets it out for me. Yeah, no, it's fantastic. So, and I see all the pictures. I'm like, don't try to lie to me and tell me that you didn't catch anything. Like, he's good friends with Dom's coach, Ryan Williams, so they always go together. I'm sure you see.
They own a boat together.
They do. They share a boat. So they just get – I'll be like, Renee, practice Saturday. He's like, nope, I'm out on the water. Sorry. So Saturday or Sunday is his, like, fishing days, which I totally understand. That's fine.
What's really crazy about this too is because I had a talk with Ryan in Cincinnati, and apparently you would know this better, but apparently in the Tampa Bay area, like, there's a big kill, like, right. Yeah. So all of the fish in the bay itself are all dead, right? They're all gone.
That's basically easy. That's how the
Juice.
No, they have to. Wow.
Yeah.
They have to drive for like an hour. Get on the boat for an hour before there's even a fish.
Yeah, it's even.
I mean, they were. Ryan is psycho. He goes at like 4 a.m. and stays for like 14 hours.
Well, they have to go an hour and a half before there's a fish
it's
to catch.
I thought he was like chilling with a beer. He's like, no, I'm like hydrating. I'm taking like pre-workout.
They have their their hoods on so they don't get sunburned. Oh, you know, they have everything. I mean, Renee's doesn't go like Ryan does. Ryan goes like a lot. But I mean, they're both like big fans. I guess it's just some type of like thrill when you catch a fish.
I
don't understand. But
if Ryan took his tennis as seriously as he takes his fishing now, like, he got to like 120, but he would have been like top 30.
He
no
was
doubt
good,
huh?
And I see him hit with
Dom. Well, he still like tunes up beef, but he would still tune up half the challenger.
Dom and him do that slice game all the time. I see him practicing and he like still grinds Dom down. Like, it's funny.
But no, 12 hours in the boat. I thought fish came from the supermarket.
I mean, you should – that stuff, that's really fresh. I get to have some that they'll catch –
what are they catching?
Like, sometimes it's like grouper usually I'll get that. Yep. Like, I want to say halibut.
They'll get red snapper.
Snapper.
Stop saying yup like you have any idea.
I have conversations with Ryan Williams on a regular basis.
If you fish and then catch a fish and don't take a picture of the fish that you caught, did you ever catch
the fish? That's true.
Yeah, because I eat it.
Oh, yeah, we could tell.
Obviously. Look at me.
I myself have actually been fishing and caught a fish as well.
Congratulations.
I'm part of the group. Yes. It was a pretty big deal. Like it was actually a rare fish. It's the one, the striped one. Ryan's going to get so pissed.
Called like the striped bass or something?
No,
was it a striper?
No, it wasn't a striper. Okay. Oh,
no,
I know the name
of this.
Stripers are a thing.
No, it wasn't the striper. It was
I'm glad a lot
it was very unique. Yeah. It's very unique. But anyways, huge accomplishment. Not a lot of people catch them, so I have some game as well. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So
all right,
awesome.
So what is your thing though? What is your thing that you do just for fun when you are not dealing with fishing or tennis?
And that's a good question as well. I'm trying to figure that out. you know, right now I'm actually doing school. So that's been my thing, unfortunately.
Still at Ohio State.
So, sports management. So nothing too difficult.
But it's Ohio State, so it's fine.
Hey now. We value our academics very highly. We don't, as Cardell Jones said, we don't come here to play school. Okay.
Right. Yes. Well aware of that quote. Was going to bring it up if you didn't.
I'm actually going to get my degree finally, I think maybe like 7 years later, this December. So I even said maybe I'll show up and walk. Like, I'm gonna take pictures. People need to know. It's taken me a long time. So it's been a battle. It's been a grind. But I took 4 classes this semester.
Wow.
So now I just have 2 classes left that I'm currently taking, which are a little bit difficult to finish out the year. But yeah, I say I'm gonna graduate. So hopefully I will get that diploma. I think I got those like tassels too, like honors.
Oh, good.
I value my education here. I worked hard for that.
Same.
So yeah, you too, right? You're not employed. You're taking classes
as
well.
6.5 weeks awake. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Wake Forest is coming up. We'll do it at the same time.
Yeah.
I'll be in December. You'll be okay. Cool.
December.
Yeah. Absolutely. December what? Sorry. What?
Merry Christmas.
You don't celebrate that. You don't believe in it. It's fine.
It's fine.
D'Lo, just remember as we let you go today so that you don't have to spend any more time, I mean, that close to Noah. But just remember, you have one accomplishment that Noah will never have, and that is an NCAA title.
You have.
Oh,
no.
Oh.
Oh, no.
He was this close.
Wait,
what
was it?
6-1, 5-3 in the finals.
Oh no! Oh no! Well,
so just remember that.
Okay.
If you're ever feeling low,
it's so miserable.
I love it. Oh my gosh.
My Greg is a good. Oh my god! I can't. But
Wake Forest is now like they.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
They won NCAA. Oh, you're sorry.
Yeah.
Got the ring too, or did you get since you're a part of? Bruski
was kind enough to give me the ACC ring the year after. Because he said, oh, you really helped our program.
Yeah,
you know, it was tough about the NCAAs, but I was like, yeah.
We'll give you a ring just in case.
D'Lo, thank you so much. And next time I won't just approach you with a phone to talk to Jamie Loeb. I'll actually say hello myself.
Yes, please do. Please do. Well, thanks for having me. It was awesome. It was really fun.
It's good stuff.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology with its sleek mid-cut silhouette. It's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.